Okay, before I introduce the first speaker, I'd like to go through a few of the ground rules for the talks. So for this first session, each speaker is expected to give a 15-minute talk. That leaves us 5 minutes for questions. And speakers, Anne has kindly provided us with this atomic clock so that the time is quite precise. When you've got 5 minutes remaining in your talk, I'll flash this sign at you. Okay, so when you have 2 minutes remaining in your talk, you will see this sign. When you have 1 minute remaining in your talk, you will see this sign, and I will also stand up and start to move menacingly toward the podium. There's actually a sign that says stop now, but if you are still talking when your time is up, I'm just going to push you off the podium, okay? And if you really get nasty, I'm going to cough on you and give you whatever bug I've got at the moment. Okay, so those ground rules apply for the speakers, actually, for the entire day, so that you'll recognize these signs. Okay, and we are right on time, so it's my... Oh, okay. All right. So it's my pleasure to introduce Scott Stolnack, who's a graduate student in the School of Aquatic and Fishery Sciences, speaking on place matters where conifers succeed on river floodplains in Olympic National Park. Scott.
Thank you very much. As Professor Conquest said, my name is Scott Stolnack. I'm a master's student of Dr. Bob Nyman over in fisheries and also an IPDIS certificate student, which means that I'm also, as well as my science degree, I'm also taking courses in environmental law and policy and am writing a chapter of my thesis on watershed restoration policies here in Washington. But today I'm going to talk about the science part of my work, which is about where conifers come in on river floodplains. I'll start with a very brief bit of background, then present some of the results from my field work, and then end by boiling it down to how I think this work might apply to those of us who are interested in river and riparian restoration. Now, most of you already know this, so I'm not going to belabor the point, but in natural systems in our region, large conifers shape rivers, which in turn, of course, shape the landscape. Note for scale, this person in the photograph, he's over 6 feet tall, so this is a fairly big tree. Because conifers can grow to such huge sizes and because they resist decay longer than hardwoods like alder and cottonwoods, conifers in natural systems in our region often become key pieces in channel-spanning log jams that can change the course of a river over its floodplain. These jams, of course, contribute to the physical and biological diversity often found on floodplains in pristine rivers in the Pacific Northwest. And again, note the person sitting on the jam here for scale. Now, log jams can also become sources of stability on floodplains. Professor David Montgomery and a colleague published a paper last year describing hard points on floodplain terraces of the Queets River that provided the protection needed for the Sitka spruces to live long enough to become the big trees that eventually fall into the river and become the hard points for successive generations. So, in short, you can't really have a completely naturally functioning river in our region if you don't have big trees, and big conifers are the trees of choice. So moving to my research project, my main questions were fairly straightforward. Where are the conifers? What are the conditions under which they survive? And do their growth rates differ in stands with and without alders? Now, I'm still processing samples to get at that last question, so today I will only be talking about the first two. My field sites were on 6 rivers inside Olympic National Park, the Elwha, Solduck, Ho, Queets, Quinault, and North Fork Skokomish rivers. Our lab has been doing research in the park for many years, mainly on the Queets River, and this was a good opportunity for us to take some of the concepts developed and see if they apply to other rivers in the region. Now, in 2006, I wasn't able to get into my sites on the Skokomish because of the fire. Some of you may remember the fire just outside the staircase entrance of the park. So I will be going back in the coming summer to finish my data collection. I found 11 plots on each river with conifers and paired them with nearby sites that didn't have conifers. I did that on all but the Solduck River, which doesn't have much of a floodplain inside the park, and so I was only able to fit in 4 plots there. And again, I'll be going back to the Skokomish in the summer. Now, an important point to mention is that I'm only looking at floodplain surfaces between about 10 and 40 years old. The reason behind that is that if the trees have lasted that long, these are the survivors of the early mortality, and therefore can tell us more about where conifers succeed on river floodplains. And also, I only counted stems that were 2 meters tall and taller. I'm going to focus on some of my more interesting results on species composition, the relationship between conifers and wood, as well as other environmental variables, and present a simple model for predicting the presence of Douglas fir trees on these young floodplain surfaces. Regarding species composition on the various rivers, there are a number of things that I think are worth pointing out. Well, first, as is to be expected, alder and willow make up most of the species that I encountered on each river, though a notable exception was the Quinault River, which didn't have many willows at all. Now, this is likely a function of the ages of the landforms that I sampled along the Quinault. Younger patches were not very well represented in the reaches that I surveyed, and younger patches is really where you would expect to find willows. This slide, I think, explains that a little bit more graphically. Along the bottom axis, you have age classes of the plots that I sampled, and then along the y-axis, you have the number of plots. And this dotted line is just basically a hypothetical cutoff between the willows and the no willows. And you'll notice that most of my Quinault plots, which are the yellow bars, are at least 26 years old, while the Elwha, Ho, and Queets rivers all had quite a few sites in the younger age classes. Each of these other rivers also had around the same proportion of willows, which was around 40%. So these findings essentially reinforce our general understanding of successional processes on floodplains in which willows come in early and then give way to alder after a couple of decades. Most of the Douglas fir that I found was on the Elwha, and again, it's what is to be expected given that it is a drier environment than the other rivers. I also found one plot on the Quinault and one of 2 plots on the Solduck had conifers as well. Now, one noteworthy finding here is that there were very, very few hemlocks and cedars on any of the floodplain surfaces that I sampled. Now, this suggests that they're really not a factor in natural floodplains, at least in the Olympics, for the first 40 or 50 years of floodplain development. And finally, note that there were very few young cottonwoods on any of my sites. Now, this is pretty remarkable given that large, older cottonwoods are so obvious on older floodplain surfaces in these areas. Now, remember, I'm only looking at the younger surfaces between about 10 and 40 years old. This lack of cottonwoods is probably related to the large herds of elk inside the park, which like to eat cottonwood. Other researchers were in the park last summer looking at this relationship, and I suspect you'll be hearing from them in the future. Now, in the conifers and wood story, here's a tally of all the conifer trees greater than 2 meters tall that I found and the proportion of trees that were clearly growing on wood. The numbers in the parentheses are the number of trees I found growing directly from wood on each river. For those trees where I couldn't just look at them and tell they were growing on wood, I took a steel rod and I probed around the base of the tree to see if I hit wood or if I hit cobble. And this is also how I measured soil depth, which is a parameter I will come back to in a few more slides. So there was a wide range of variation for the Sitka spruce on the wood, from about half the trees on the Quinault to about 5% on the Hoh. Now, as far as the Elwha was concerned, none of the conifers that I surveyed there were growing on wood. Now, this isn't especially surprising because these are Douglas fir, and Douglas fir really prefer to germinate in bare mineral soil. So note again how few hemlock and cedar I found, but the few hemlocks I did find were almost all growing on wood, and most of them were also pretty severely browsed as well, presumably from the elk that I mentioned earlier. And, okay, in comparing my environmental variables between the conifer and the non-conifer patches, I tested each river separately for differences between the two kinds of patches in mean soil depth, soil moisture, height above the river level, and percent canopy cover. And so far, no clear pattern has emerged among the west side rivers where Sitka spruce dominates. While I did find some statistical differences in some of the rivers, the story appears to be more complex than I can really get at with just these four variables. Now, things may sort out a bit more clearly after I finish analyzing my data, because I have some other parameters that I can bring into the mix. Now, on the Elwha River, there was a significant difference in three of the four variables. Soil depth was shallower, height above river level was higher, and canopy cover was less for plots with Douglas fir. Now, these data highlight the fact that we're dealing with Douglas fir here rather than Sitka spruce. Shallower soil depth on river floodplains is likely to put more water stress on the plants. Douglas fir is considered more drought tolerant than the other conifers I found on any of the rivers, and at least on our side of the Cascades, they're thought of as a primary successional species. Height above the river water level is an indicator of how likely the surface is to be flooded, which is related to soil depth as well as disturbance. And canopy cover on these plots is probably more an effect of the other three variables than a determinant of conifer presence or absence. These findings on the Elwha suggested that it might be possible to model where Douglas fir could be found on river floodplains or where they might have the best chance of growing successfully. So to test this, I used soil depth, elevation, and soil moisture data from the Elwha River plots to model Douglas fir presence or absence with logistic regression. And by elevation here, I mean the same thing I've been talking about, which is the height of the plot above the water level. Well, it turned out that this model had a pretty good classification rate, 82%. It correctly classified 18 of the 22 plots from the Elwha River. So then I tested whether this model could predict which plots on the Solduck and Quinault rivers had Douglas fir. Now remember, these were the other two rivers where I found Douglas fir plots. And again, the results were pretty good, 81% in this case. It correctly classified 21 of 26 plots. So in a nutshell, the model appears to hold up pretty well, at least under limited testing. And my Skokomish River site, which was off limits to me last summer, also has plots with Douglas fir, so I'll be able to go back there in 2007 and use that data to see whether it still holds up. And from pilot data that I collected in 2005, I think it'll hold up pretty well. We've covered a lot of ground, I know, and I think it's probably time to wrap things up and see if we can put this into a little context for riparian restoration and management. Well, first of all, place does matter. While it's pretty much the same handful of species on the rivers in our region, conditions even under natural circumstances can vary widely. So there's really no substitute for knowing your particular river. And what this also probably means for restoration is that you'll want to focus on restoring processes and species assemblages rather than hard numbers and tailor your plantings to the specifics of the site. Now, I suspect that most of you managers are already doing that or definitely moving in that direction. I think that's been kind of the advice for quite some time. If you have a really young site, the patch might not be ready for certain conifers like cedar or hemlock. The soils or other environmental conditions may not support them, and other factors like the presence of large herbivores also have to be taken into consideration. Douglas fir likes shallow soils, and they're more drought-tolerant than willow and alder, though they're less tolerant of flooding, which is one reason you find them on higher ground. Now, most of this information might not be very new to you foresters in the audience, but I don't think that this knowledge is always used in floodplain restoration. And finally, associations between conifers and wood, here we go. Associations between conifers and wood vary from site to site. Wood in rivers and on floodplains is important for a number of reasons, but not all species use wood as a growing substrate, and those that do also seem to get along fine without it in other places. I think I'm being pushed off the stage. Thanks for listening. I have time. This is my end anyway. I'm done. Okay. So questions? She said I should repeat the question. Okay, there's a hand. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm just wondering, when you were looking for wood, the trees, what did you do in the case of big spruce trees? And also, you presented numbers, not percentages. Did you calculate percentages of the trees growing on the wood?
I have that data, but I didn't present it today. I can certainly furnish that to you. And as far as buttress spruce trees are concerned, I was only looking at young spruce trees, so that wasn't an issue. None of the trees that I found were over 40 years old. So no. I didn't repeat the question, but she was in the back of the room. So, yes? Okay, let me... Wrong way.
I was confused when you said jasper for shallow soils, but you also find them at higher elevations, and I guess I was just assuming that at higher elevation soils.
Right. No, that wasn't the case. Actually, it was. Keep going. Right. The conifer plots, actually the soil depth was only about 17 centimeters, even though it was higher. The places where the conifers were growing, the depth was actually shallower. And the other places had a much deeper soil. It's about twice as much here.
So what was at the bottom of the soil?
So the question, what was at the bottom of the soil? It's cobble. It's basically river cobble. It's where the river used to be until the river moved, and then it developed into flood or depositional places. Okay. Any other? Yes?
How do you think the river of the Elbow Dam is going to affect the conifers?
Well, that's a good question, and it really depends on the... I'm sorry. How do I think that the removal of the Elwha Dam will affect the conifers on the river? I assume you're talking about the conifers that will come in where the dam used to be. That's a good question, and it really depends on what happens to all that sediment that's behind the dam or in the reservoir. Because when the sediment moves around, that will determine... just what things can grow there. And as I'm finding here, if you want Douglas fir, you probably want, or at least I'm finding that they will come in where the sediment is shallower, the soil, what you want to call the alluvial deposited material is shallower. So it really depends on the fineness of the soil, of the deposition, and... really what else can grow there, I think. And I think the reason I found the conifers where I did was because it was a pretty harsh place for everything else to grow, and basically the Douglas firs were able to handle it. Yes?
Can you
that I see a difference in the size between of the trees between those that were accessible to anadromous fish and those that weren't. I don't think with my data that I'll be able to get at that particular question, actually. But I didn't see anything. I do have some growth rate data that I'm analyzing from tree cores, and I also have needle samples, so I'll be able to get at some of those things. But I think that there are other studies that are probably designed more specifically to get at that question, and they can probably answer that question better than I can. Yes, sir.
Yeah. How about soils that are saturated over time? There's a lot of floodplain soils around the Kanawha River that are saturated to a degree that the Douglas fir might be not well adapted. I just wondered what kind of tree species would grow in there.
Right.
In terms of conifers.
So the question was, what types of conifer species would grow in the saturated soils? For instance, on the Quinault, there's these places where there are a lot of saturated soils. That's a good question, and I'm really not sure. Definitely not Douglas fir. Sitka spruce, potentially, I think. The places where I did see Sitka spruce growing in those really wet places generally seem to be on top of wood. Just anecdotally, I'll say that. But I can't really say at this point. I mean, we're talking about young soils again, young areas. And in those young areas, it was mostly just alder and willow in those really wet places. Is that it? Okay. Thank you very much.